The weekend is near, and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
You'd be excused for thinking you just binged a TV soap opera series. Corns v Dangerfield, Beveridge v Barrett, Vardy v Gorn, Carlton v Carlton fans. There were more spats than an episode of The Bold and the Beautiful. We'll try and make sense of it all on the Fox Footy Podcast and let the happiest man in the football media, Western Bulldogs Games record holder Brad Johnson, make sense of it all on the Fox Footy Podcast. Ben Waterworth with you, as is the lady who has stepped up in the absence of Tom Morris for Fair or Fast this week, Sarah Ollie. Hello, Says.
I'm going to bring it home. Tom, you should be nervous if you're listening.
Jerry, man, I almost got the sack when you came in to replace me, so clearly Tom should be worried as well.
I'm very versatile, Max.
That's true.
I can be Tom, I can be you, I can be myself, whatever.
It's a large range.
Yes, Sarah
you're
can definitely
next.
Be me. Hello, Max, how are you?
I'm very well, Ben. I'm surprised that you mentioned Bold and the Beautiful. Clearly the biggest TV show to be talked about this week.
It's like the longest running show, FYI, I'm pretty sure.
B&B, FYI.
I watch wrestling a lot, as we've discussed, and they always say that we're the longest running episodic television show in history or something.
Right.
We'll send that one up to Erasmus. I'm not sure if it's true.
Oh, come on.
We'll get Murray to
There's nothing not
that.
Real in wrestling, Sarah.
It's been a huge weekend in the AFL. So, Maxi, let's start with the power rankings more than anything else. And we'll start at the bottom, where I think, no doubt, it would have been a unanimous 18th place this week, and Carlton has been the talk of the town ever since that disastrous loss on Sunday night.
Yeah, so when you're 18th after nearly beating Collingwood, you're definitely 18th after losing by 93 points and probably being flattered by the fact that you lost by only 93 points. Mm. Yeah, you could tell once it got to Sunday evening. So we do a report card every Monday morning and we build that through the weekend. And I was talking to you about this on Monday, Sarah, about how we have grades for every team.
Mm.
And we say, oh, this team did really well. They go, nah, you get a D, you weren't so great. And I realised that no team had really just completely not showed up in a game.
Mm.
And so it just happened that Carlton did so in the last game of the weekend, as if providing on a platter topics for talkback radio and TV to discuss, because they were appallingly bad. And admittedly, GWS is coming off a loss and they really wanted to win and they're a very good side and playing at home and they thumped Essendon there in round one. But geez, Carlton just did not look like an AFL quality team in that match. It was appalling.
What did you make of it, Sarah?
Well, I just thought with Patrick Cripps being tagged by Matt DeBoer, who, God, he is doing a fantastic job week in, week out, Matt DeBoer, they really got exposed. I mean, they rely so heavily on him to carry the load, and they showed last night on the couch the minutes he's played in the midfield this year, and it's about 100 minutes more than any other midfielder. So without him firing, they really looked lost, and the game was done and dusted by quarter time.
Yep.
I mean, as a Blues fan, what do you do? I saw Sam Edmonds' article in the Herald Sun today. And he's worried that his kids are going to come up to him now and say, we don't want to follow the Blues anymore because they've had no success throughout their short lifetime. And they're the conversations that families have and they're the conversations that clubs should be worried about because the supporters are the base of the club.
It's fair enough. My dad was a Richmond supporter, but I'm not a Richmond fan. He didn't try hard enough to get me to join the
And your mum's a Hawthorn fan.
Exactly. So
instead of a Geelong fan.
My favourite cousin was a Cats fan.
Right.
So I had to follow him, of course.
So we normally in the back half of the season do an article on foxfooty.com.au, Maxi, called The Run Home.
Yes.
But for the Blues, it's the run to the bye.
Yes.
Four weeks for Brendan Bolton and the Blues to really make a statement.
This is sort of the consensus, and I'll sort of talk about why I maybe disagree with that after that. But St Kilda this weekend is a really big game. The Saints have lost four in a row. So honestly, Carlton has been good and bad, very bad, in alternate weeks over the past month. So they could probably beat the Saints for all we know. Then Essendon, and they've beat Essendon,
last
year?
They're good against the Bombers.
They've got a good record.
Interesting one. Brisbane at home sounded a lot easier before the season started, and Brisbane now being 6-3.
Yeah.
80% of teams that go 6-3 make the finals.
Like it.
So they're a big chance of making it. And then the Bulldogs, who, again, are improving clearly. They've actually been scoring over the last 3 weeks, and we'll talk to Jono about that later on. So that's a really big month for the Blues, and I think the consensus is if the Blues are, what would they be after that, 1-12? 1-12 is very much unrecoverable, and I think a lot of people would be calling for Bolton's head at that point.
So why do you what part of it do you disagree in terms of looking at the next 4 weeks?
So I think it's a more holistic view of Carlton. We knew they were going to be bad. I think everyone has
this bad in the fourth year.
Well, when we say this bad, they looked really bad against GWS on the road. Yes, that's true. But before, literally a week ago, they almost beat Collingwood and arguably should have at the MCG, a grand finalist who we're all saying is still probably second in line for the flag this year. And they've had some all right performances. They've had some valiant losses, as fans are very much sick of. But
I can sort of see this heading in a percentage debate sort of direction.
Yeah. So that's the...
What is their percentage at?
It is 76.4, which is not the worst.
That's okay, yeah.
And that's after the 93-point loss as well.
Yeah, Melbourne and Gold Coast still have a worse percentage. Mm. Melbourne, who's 3-5, have a worse percentage. So you look at Carlton's percentage, I believe that's up on last year.
Yep.
And the comparison is made to Brisbane quite often, and they did that on the couch last night.
Yep.
Very interesting little discussion there about how percentage is a big way of measuring things. Paul Ruse did that when he got to the Demons. Yeah. It was all about building the percentage year on year, and they've done that and until this year, obviously. And the Blues are going up. And I always thought that this last year was going to be the pit of the rebuild. This might be slightly better. Then Sam Doherty went down. And they just clearly don't have the talent right now. They might still end up with 4 or 5 wins, for all we know. So I feel like right now is the lowest ebb, and we're all sort of saying, well, Bolton clearly has to be sacked, but... What does that gain? Is a new coach going to suddenly find talent on this list?
No, but will a new coach them in a different manner to get more out of them? I think that's what people are asking. If someone else was in Brendan Bolton's position, would the team be having these same results? I mean, how are we to know that?
But by these sorts of results, do we just mean the GWS game and the North game? Those are the two really bad
ones. I mean, they're
ones.
The two blowouts, and it's 2 in 3 weeks, which is the issue, isn't it? Because a lot of experts say you can be forgiven maybe once or twice in a year, but 2 in 3 weeks, that's problematic.
Yeah. I just, my view is if you bring in a new coach in, that's a whole new transition. You bring in a lot of assistant coaches, I'd imagine, as well, if you bring in a new senior coach. Does this team need all of that change? Does that help them? Would that not...
Well, if you use the Tom Morris argument that if there was, you know, look at St Kilda and the amount of change they've had in their assistant coaches and their entire coaching panel, that's helped them. But whether to change the head of the coaching panel halfway through a season and how much you gain, which is what Paul Ruse sort of was weighing up last night.
Yeah.
How much do you gain by dropping a coach mid-season and having someone else come in, which will be an interesting point of discussion. Sarah, does Bolton, do you think, does he make it to 2020 as the senior head coach at Carlton?
If they don't win a couple more games, I don't think he gets to see the fruits of his labour. And that's just how ruthless this industry is.
They finish 3-19. Does he make it 2020?
Well, tell me their percentage, Maxi.
73.
Maybe just, maybe. But they'd want to start looking a bit better and be a bit more consistent week to week, I think.
But this is... The plan wasn't to be great this year. They thought they were going to be better than they were, obviously. That's why they traded their first-round pick.
Yes,
So that's part of the problem as well, is that there's conflicting messages there, is that they know they're still rebuilding, and yet they trade away that pick, and that's why the footy department has to be under as much scrutiny as anyone, because they have made so many changes. I think it was 40-something players have gone out over 2 years.
50-3, maybe?
It's massive, massive change. And so clearly your intent is, all right, let's find undervalued players that we can play and get games into because it's not going to matter anyway, you know, stuff like that. So if you're making change, it has to be everyone. And then you're just doing another rebuild. So sort of you've brought these guys in to oversee this rebuild. Let it actually happen. If it fails in 2020 or 2021, then you can sort of start again, I think.
Well, at the other end of the ladder, I think clearly Collingwood, GWS and the Cats will occupy the two top three spots in the ladder, and I would assume occupy the top three spots in this week's power rankings as well.
Yes.
How does the rest of the top eight of the rankings look? Because it is just, there are maybe a couple of challenges to that top three that are starting to re-emerge.
Yeah, so you look at the percentage, as we mentioned with Carlton, it's really big. The top three teams all have a percentage of 129 or better. That's really good. Next best is Adelaide on 115-ish, and then Fremantle is fifth. I don't think anyone thinks Adelaide and Fremantle are the fourth and fifth best teams right now. Adelaide, at least in the conversation.
Adelaide probably in the top eight.
Yes, but not there. So you've got teams like Richmond fourth, whose percentage is barely over 100, and they've got so many injuries, but they keep winning, and they've had 2 really good weeks. Mm. So I think a lot of it is just the belief in, well, we've seen the Tigers do it for 2 straight years. Clearly they're going to be in the mix. The top eight might be set, really, when you look at it.
Yep.
Are there any teams you can see jumping in? You've got teams like
Essendon. Yeah.
Essendon have maybe the highest ceiling of any team. Like if I said to you, one team out of the top eight right now will make the top four, you'd guess Essendon.
Who are 9th and 10th? It's Essendon and who's 10th?
On the ladder or on the power rankings? In the power rankings, we have Essendon, then Hawthorn, followed by Fremantle and the Bulldogs. I actually like the Bulldogs quite a bit.
Yeah, the Dogs have shown some good signs over the past 3 weeks. I think at the moment the difference between a team's best and worst, there's no greater chasm than Essendon at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, even they were close to playing their worst on Saturday night against Fremantle.
It was a shocking
game.
Almost
came undone, Sarah.
It was so ugly, I could barely watch. In fact, I was, and I started watching the Swans.
Oh, and you
kind of did,
you turn over in the second quarter?
Yeah, seven goals for two. But then also on stretch, we watched the last 2 minutes live.
Oh, yes. Now, that was good telling.
Oh, my goodness. My heart was going through its chest. It was a form of torture.
That just seems like a really poor decision for them worrying about swearing. To be honest.
Yeah, I didn't swear. I've
particularly,
been good this year.
Particularly Sarah.
You have form in that area.
I squealed, though, like a little pig. Like, yeah.
It's factually correct.
Is that a Jetsons plane or something?
But it was quite fascinating viewing, actually. It's almost like, reminded me of sort of like a footy box, the footy's version of Gogglebox. Yes. Watching a supporter watch the last 30 seconds of a game.
It's the second screen experience. It's what we're all about in television these days. So the top eight, you've got teams like West Coast in there, Adelaide, Brisbane, Port Adelaide, who barely got past Gold Coast. Mm. Who do you guys trust the least of the top eight right now? If you were going to say one of them was going to drop out based on their current form, who would you say? Because honestly, I would say West Coast.
Yeah, they're patchy, aren't they?
I think I've watched West Coast last three games. I've just been rostered on for them. I have not been impressed with them once. Mm. I think Melbourne looked okay on Friday night and played well and really wasted their chances and should have won, but Andrew Gaff is not being damaging at all. West Coast is not performing well. And it's not like that they have injuries. Nick Nat's still not there. But it's not like they have the injuries of a Richmond or a Port. I could see one of them dropping out, but it just seems, unless they pick something up, they're going to be struggling come the back end of the season. The thing is, though, they keep winning. So they're 6-3, and they probably might be 9-3 because they don't have that tough of a next 3 weeks.
How about on the flip side, apart from Geelong, Collingwood and GWS?
Yes.
Who's the sleeper in the eight there that you could see challenging for the flag?
Richmond, just because they're playing as well as they are without their best team in there at all.
And some of the kids they've found are incredible.
Yeah, they're going to have a lot of dilemmas come the end of the year once,
tough selection.
Bolter and Stack have to keep playing.
So to go back to your original question, I think from a short-term precedent, West Coast are probably the team we can't trust.
Yes.
On a long-term precedent, Brisbane is probably that team. But Can we just totally ignore the long-term precedent that Brisbane hasn't made finals since 2009?
There's always a team that jumps up and shocks everyone like that, and I think Brisbane is that team this year.
Well, it's probably a good segue into the mailbag segment this week. If you have the... That's our sting. Hope it didn't tear too many of your notes there.
Sorry, I just stole Sarah's paper. And...
It's okay.
Our first question, Maxi, comes from... And we'll double tag team this. Will the Brisbane Lions be taken seriously by the rest of the competition if they beat Fremantle in WA, or will it still be the attitude, which I just used, of Brisbane are in the eight, but they're not in the eight best teams yet?
See, I don't think there is that attitude anymore.
Well, I just sort of used it as well.
A little bit.
In
terms of trust for making the finals, that would be the attitude, I think, from
me. But I'm expecting the Lions to go over and beat the Dockers. Mm. For me, I do trust them. I think they've really built something special. That list of theirs looks fantastic. I mean, they're at the point now where they're thinking, do we drop Cam Rayner, our number one draft pick? That's how good they're going.
Would you drop Cam Rayner?
Was it three touches?
Three touches.
As I said before, it's hard to only get three touches. Put your hand out, you might get a couple more.
And it's an accumulation of a couple of poor weeks as well.
And Chris Fagan's backed him in, and he's a really big supporter of his. Maybe working in Rayner's favour is the fact that the Lions had a bye in the NEAFL, so there's no one really knocking down the door. So maybe they keep him in. I don't know. Do you do it for a bit of shock factor? I don't know if that's a thing that coaches really do these days.
It depends on whether you do that with a young group as compared to an experienced team.
Yeah.
If Tom was here, he'd tell me off for doing this, but I want to look at the Lions fixture.
Oh, yes.
Because they have
Tom. Oh, it's so boring.
I can't believe you're doing it. Of course, they'll be favoured. But if you give them a win against Fremantle on the weekend, Brisbane, who are 4-1 at the Gabba this year, only losing to Collingwood, they have home games against Hawthorn, Melbourne, North Melbourne, the Bulldogs and Gold Coast to come.
Mm.
Favoured in all five.
Yep. Win them all.
Away games against Carlton and St Kilda.
Favourable.
That's seven wins. That gets you to 13. You beat Fremantle, that gets you to 14.
Yep.
They're in the top four mix. with that sort of record. If they can win the games they should win, now, they should win all of those games.
That would be a story. Top four for the Lions.
And you always say that there's someone that just comes from the clouds to finish in the top four from the 12 months prior.
I would like to think if they make the top four, it will not be 10 pages into the back of the Courier Mail before you see a Lions story. As Mitch Robinson pointed out that it was over the weekend. Despite that incredible game, that Crows game was one of the games of the season. And impressed me as well. Adelaide actually impressed me in that because I was not a believer despite their four straight wins. And to play as well as they did, even in defeat, was probably better than some of those victories.
What else is in the mailbag that's taking your fancy? A lot of questions have come in this week.
Yes. We have a couple about the match review, obviously. Yes. Ancient Tiger, has, perhaps this is why he has this view. How can Ivan Soldo get a week for that while Ablett and Fife get off? And Bruce Crabe asks, why isn't Mumford on report?
So just on Soldo, so from how I read it is that it's exactly the same gradings as what Ablett was graded for against Dylan Scheel a couple of weeks ago. Ablett got the 1 week, went to the tribunal and got it downgraded to a fine. And it's understood, you know, this is coming out before the official tribunal challenge documents have been lodged, but we're of the understanding that Richmond is going to be challenging this and might be trying to going with the same argument to download the intent down from intentional to careless.
Right.
Is it still in play? Like, so I think Ablett, you could probably argue that it was definitely in play, but Soldo looked a fair bit more off the ball, says.
To get off for Ablett, did he employ that, what was that, that clause he could have employed?
The good bloke clause.
The good bloke, yes. Did he use that?
Well, it was certainly part of the argument, no doubt when they were arguing.
Yes, you can make the case that it's more of a legal sort of
situation.
I mean,
so Ivan Soldo can't use that argument, can he?
How many games has he played?
Well, he hasn't been suspended, I suppose. It still counts.
I told you I had a problem with someone using that good bloke clause because it might come back to bite them in the bum. But I think going off the precedent at the tribunal, they're overthrowing decisions. So I wouldn't be surprised if he gets off. Mm. I mean, Warple kind of comes towards him.
Yeah.
And even though the elbow to the face or to the shoulder, maybe up onto the face, doesn't look great, I don't really think there was much in it. And if the precedent is anything to go by, the big fella gets off for mine.
And let's be clear on it that you mentioned as well. Ablett got a week.
Yep.
Then they argued it down.
Yes.
It's not that they're grading it in a different way. Yes. Michael Christian's being consistent.
Yep, very consistent. Yeah. I think he did the right thing to grade both of them the same.
And as for Shane Mumford, I think we've been trained as a media now to look at, Mark Murphy might miss a month with a rib injury, so he's injured, therefore Mumford has to get banned. But Mumford didn't do a reportable offence.
That's the key. So the first, when the MRO sits down, the first thing he looks at is this a reportable offence?
Yes.
And when he looked at the Shane Mumford incident, he said that was not a reportable offence.
Was it
line ball? Could he have been a little bit more careful in how he went about it? That's quite subjective if you think that, but that's ultimately what Christian's view came down to.
Well, that's just Big Mummy as well, isn't it?
Yeah, you can't penalise him for being big.
The House of Pain. Mm. Yeah.
Mitch Duncan otherwise would have made him get a month off.
Poor old Mitch Duncan, who was best on ground on the weekend, actually.
Yes.
He's flying under the radar, Mitch Duncan.
Going very, very well.
Brad Johnson's big on that.
Yes.
James Beard asks, what do you genuinely think of football players like Lewis Jetta's tackle resulting in suspension while other players are striking players and free to play? So this sort of follows on. I genuinely think as if we're lying otherwise. Thank you, James.
What do you think, Cez?
I think it was a really tough one because Tim Smith, who was very dazed after the incident, he thought the play had stopped. So he just had nothing to support himself. So when Jetta's laying this tackle, his head does get driven into the turf and we don't want to see those incidents. I think it was just an unfortunate incident, but we want to protect the head.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with how it was graded. Maybe the umpires need to blow the whistle a bit louder. I don't know.
It's a duty of care sort of situation. You sort of have to be worried about players in that.
I want to go a little bit more sounding board. This is a question from Harrison Callahan. As journalists, each should have defended a member of your profession in Damien Barrett following Luke Berridge's comments about his, quote, dark soul and alluding to this being a significant factor in Tom Boyd's decline in health. And that was a very similar sentiment to what Caroline Wilson, who we know is very much on the AFL Media Association union bandwagon,
yes,
raised on Footy Classified on Monday night.
Hutchie, I was thinking. So we understand the point that it was strange to see a coach coming out and saying such strong comments about a journalist in a press conference that was about a player's retirement.
In a very emotional press conference.
Yeah. And all the rest of it was very much on song, as you'd expect, the tributes to Tom Boyd. And to say all that was surprising, but this is clearly how strongly beveraged fields. So I can't begrudge him for having an opinion. I can begrudge him for the platform in which he put it out there. Mm. I think that's questionable in a sense.
But, I mean, it's not like all journalists belong to the political party. It's not like we're Labor and whatever you say, Max, I'm going to defend you. Like, we're...
Yes.
I don't think that's a thing at all, is it? Is that a sentiment that we're meant to share?
I suppose the idea would be that as journalists, we all have a platform to give out opinions, and therefore we should be able to defend others, journalists, giving their opinions as well.
But also, we don't know the ins and the outs that have gone on there.
No.
So we might be defending something that we actually don't know the specifics of. Mm. So I'm happy to keep way out of it. Harrison?
Yes.
Harrison Ford.
And I think, interesting mix of, yes. I do think that the Tom Boyd issue, I'm sure the media scrutiny after his contract has had something to do with him retiring. I don't know how much you can put that on one journalist, though. Mm. That's where it gets tricky for me. Next one from me.
Yes.
Ben Para. Just give me some syllables to understand your name. Please, Twitter people. Tom's article on Stephen May's beers highlighted the time, expectation, and raw feedback a modern footballer puts in. I'm shocked there aren't more Boyd-type retirements. Is the 17-round home-and-away season the only way to provide players with a healthy work-life balance?
The only balance I think the 17-round home-and-away season will bring is probably fixture balance.
Yes.
I think more than anything. I don't necessarily think it's going to...
We have a few more weeks off.
Yes, but players already have quite a fair few weeks off put into their contract, which has been mandated by the AFL Players Association. So I don't know if chopping off five home and away rounds is necessarily the answer to improve players' mental health. I think it's just more, I know Sarah, you've been quite passionate about this space. I think it's just more awareness and more education and players and clubs and officials knowing when to stop or when to just take a step back.
There was a bit to unpack in that question because there were quite a few contentions there. But
yes.
I think one of the things that the question was suggesting was that maybe there is a responsibility on the part of journalists to be kind and be fair when reporting about things such as Tom Boyd's contract. And we know he's had this huge mental health issue. The one thing I will say, though, is that as journalists, we write with a byline, so we're very accountable to what we write. I think a bigger problem is in social media where people aren't accountable to what they say. And that's having a really big impact on not just players' mental health, but I think mental health of the public in general. In terms of players not having enough time to kick back and relax, I think you'll find they've got a lot more time to kick back and relax in the off season than the rest of us lay people.
Is it more the intensity of the season rather than the length of it? I'm sure if you have an extra 4 or 5 weeks, it doesn't help. But it's just so, especially if you're at a Melbourne club, it's just so intense day by day. And we have to be available as journalists to criticise onerous contracts, things like $7 million for a player who hasn't really shown it yet. You can understand why people were critical of the Tom Boyd contract. Now, you can say he made it worth it by winning them a grand final. That's certainly a fair case. But you have to be able to criticise that, play the ball and not the man, as it were, in this situation.
But also it was the Dogs that offered that contract. So I think maybe it was the club carrying a lot of the heat as well.
Yeah, we can't criticise him for getting as much as he wants. That's how free agency works. That's
throw
how
me a million bucks a year.
And don't get me wrong, I'm a huge fan of the 17-round home and away season. I think it would solve a lot of issues. I don't necessarily think it's the answer, though, to improving player mental health and well-being.
Fair enough. We also have Harry Strahan asking, who will be the next captain of Geelong?
Yes, I heard about saw that question. And I was looking sort of through the Geelong players list. And when you look at probably players that are maybe 28 and under, there's sort of no one that really stands out. I'd like to know how Mark Blitzars is sort of respected around the playing group.
Jewel Best and Ferris.
I think he might be. So the logical person is Patrick Dangerfield. But there's
is he
not much
younger than Selwood.
But that's the thing. There's not much difference between Selwood and Dangerfield in terms of age. There is about sort of 40-ish games worth of experience. Blitzars was the first guy that came to my mind. And we did mention Mitch Duncan beforehand, but from just what I've observed, he doesn't necessarily scream captaincy material. I could be totally wrong, but my first go-to, I think, was Blitzars.
Is this going to be a situation like whoever replaced Nick Riewoldt? Like, Joel Selwood has been such an iconic captain for the Cats. I just feel like it's going to be such a difficult pair of shoes to fill.
I also imagine it's hard to sort of show yourself as captaincy material when you have so many veteran leaders at that club, so many champions of the game. So it's hard to sort of get your voice heard over the Dangerfields and Ablett's and Selwood's.
I do wonder how Tom Stewart is going to develop as a leader as well.
Yep.
I think he's got lots of good potential there. One player I don't think will be captain will be Grian Meyers.
Oh, really, come on. Captain Grian.
Doesn't really strike me as captain.
I'd serve on
plenty
him.
Plenty of time to mature into
very
that.
Good player. Very exciting player.
Do you think the biggest step in his maturity would be getting a haircut?
Oh, I don't know, Max. I'm sort of a bit out of my wheelhouse.
I mean, it's not really a captain's haircut, is it? Has there ever been an AFL captain with dreads?
Dyson Heppel?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, he doesn't know how to sharker, though, so that's also an issue. Big problems at some clubs. Should we do one more?
Yes, one more.
Ben is back. Ben Pera. Mid-season draft seems broke already.
Broke?
We haven't even done it, Ben.
Yes.
Come on.
It's got no money. Should it be restricted to over 21 or 23-year-olds, in which case why couldn't teams be allowed to bring mature-age players over, say, 25 at any stage during the year? This would be in reference.
I'll throw it back to you because, Chris, you wrote a story of what Chris Scott said last night on AFL 360 about how the mid-season draft appears at this stage that might not be used by clubs in the spirit that it was originally designed to be.
Yeah, so his contention was that clubs were supposed to be using the mid-season draft to pick up, say, a ruckman from the Sandful if they've lost a ruckman, a like-for-like sort of thing to play straight away. Whereas realistically, a State League player might not be ready to play straight away, so instead let's just pick the best 19-year-old who just got missed out on drafting and had a really good year so far in the State Leagues and then warehouse them in the VFL team, as Scott said, for half the season and then bring them in as if you're going to be drafting them in November. The worry essentially being that clubs will use the draft to pick the best player available to be very reductive about it.
Isn't that the point of a draft, though?
In a sense, yes. So I think perhaps there was a problem with the initial intent, and that's what he actually said about Geelong. I've worried about that internally for a little while, if this was to come up. Stephen Wells has said this for quite a while, that the recruiting system is built around building up for the end of the season. You're ramping up, you're following players through an entire year and learning how they develop as players and their bodies and all of that stuff. So if you bring in this thing in May, suddenly that all changes. So it could be tough to actually see how it's going to work. I am very interested to see how it works. Next Monday, isn't it?
Next Monday, 6:30, will be on Fox Footy.
Oh, fantastic. Great lead.
Broadcasting Fox Footy.
Yes.
Maybe about half an hour, I think.
Okay.
That draft. So make sure you check that out. Nice work on the mailbag, Maxi.
Oh, as
always. We've been talking about so many spats already, but one man I don't think he's ever had a spat with anyone. He's just the most joyful man in the football media, and of course the Western Bulldogs games record holder and Fox Footy star on Saturday, Stretch Brad Johnson. And he's joined us on the Fox Footy podcast. Hello, Jono.
Always a great introduction from you, Benny. Thank you, mate.
great to have you on board on the podcast, as always. Let's just sort of start, I suppose, with how the top three looks at the moment in the AFL ladder, and I suppose in the seedings in many people's eyes, the power rankings, the Collingwood, Geelong and the Giants. You saw the Pies firsthand on Saturday afternoon. How do you sort of differentiate the three teams at the top at the moment?
Yeah, look, they're all different, all playing different football, which is good for the competition. You've got Collingwood, who have been challenged the last couple of weeks in terms of around the footy and contested ball and all those sort of areas, which they're very strong at with the key midfielders they've got in their side. But they just flex their muscle at the right time. The Pies, they're very, very good over four quarters of football. I saw the guys on the couch mention the way they start, which is always puts the opposition on the back foot, and their first quarters have been very good. So they get off to a flyer, but then the opposition, you know, try and compete and sustain that pressure, which is very difficult to do against them. And they always finish strongly. So the Pies have been very good. GWS, well, they responded, which you'd expect them to do after what was a disappointing game a couple of weeks ago now. So they certainly got their game back in the right fashion. Their key players are winning really important ball for them again, which they did on the weekend. And Jeremy Finlayson has been a bit of a surprise this year, but certainly probably not internally where they thought he could get to as a player. And the Cats, well, they're just, you know, obviously they've got really good players. But I think the change of role from their good players at the start of the year has really galvanised the side in terms of the younger players getting opportunity and showing what class they do have throughout their best 22.
Good to see you waited for the lights there, Jono.
Yeah, no Jay walking on this podcast.
So when it comes to splitting the pack... There you go.
Different these days, Sarah, out and about. So just thought I'd be a bit more relaxed and calmer if I got the dogs out for a walk while I chatted to you.
So when it comes to splitting the pack, it's kind of the Pies, the Cats and the Giants as the three teams that most people see as the biggest threats. But how about some of those other teams sitting in the top eight there? We know that Richmond and Port, they're doing their best to cover wins while they've still got players out injured. How do you see the eight shaping out?
Oh, it's a good point, Sarah. It really is, especially in terms of Richmond. I think what they're being able to produce at the moment is absolutely critical with the way that you know, just they've got so many injuries, and on the back of that, they're now put themselves in a position in the top five. So the second half of the year for Richmond could be something special, and they could definitely challenge again come the latter part of the year. Port Adelaide's hanging in there, as are a number of other sides, and you just got to win a couple of games in a row and you're back in the mix with the eight. So it's certainly wide open. Sides will now try and position themselves leading into their bye round, get a spell, and then obviously try and capitalise on that in the latter part of the year.
Hey, just on the Tigers, there's a kid floating about called Noah Bolter who had an absolute cracker of a match but didn't get the Rising Star nomination. Now, we know that you're part of the selection panel there. Ooh. What does he have to do to get a nomination, Jono?
Look at you, Sarah.
Investigative journalism.
I like it. Yeah, very much so. I do assist in the process, of course, and Noah was very good again. But there was a young man at the Western Bulldogs, Bailey Smith, this week, who had 28 disposals and was very, very good in what he was able to produce. So he gets the nod this week, and I'm sure Noah and a lot of other young players in the competition will get their look in over the rest of the year if they continue to play really solid and improving footy. And look, for me, you know, the whole process is really, really good, and the fact these young guys get their opportunity to shine more regularly, especially the last couple of years, has been really impressive. So where these young men are producing good football week in, week out, as they build up to be drafted, is holding them in good stead, and they're having an impact really early on in their careers, which is making it more and more difficult to select one each week. That process may have to change in the future, and maybe even the goal and mark of the week needs to change as well. You see Liam Ryan take it out, which he deserved, but Tom Stewart being the second best mark probably we might see this year doesn't get a look in for later in the year when we go through the results. So maybe a few things might change in the future.
So you're saying in the future you might want the option to nominate more than one player per round for the Rising Star?
Well, I'll just say you get two young guys that they both kick five goals and have 25 disposals, and you've got to separate them.
Yep.
And then that young player mightn't be able to produce that again for a month or so, you know, because it is very, very difficult to consistently do that. So, you know, that's something that might need to, you know, be looked at in the future, and that might come down to the discussions with the NAB and what they actually give to the, I think it's the young players club, you know, once they are nominated. So, or junior club once they're nominated. So they're things that I'm sure the AFL are keeping a close eye on and looking to evolve as the years go on, because as we said, these young men are coming in and playing just super football. So they deserve a nomination.
Jono, you mentioned beforehand the mark of the week discussion there. Liam Ryan and Tom Stewart were absolutely outstanding. I suppose one man who could empathise with Max Gawn the most about having a mark taken on him in the goal square is your good self. Some people were saying it was the best goal square specky since that Gary Moorcroft mark all those years ago. Your thoughts from down below?
Some are saying it, Benny, and I'm probably leading the charge in saying that, because it definitely is. What a mark it was from Liam Ryan. The lead up to it, I think, is what enables this mark to really stand out as well. And you know, of Anthony Hudson's call of it was brilliant. Mm. So was BT. But look, it's just the whole lead up to it was huge, as was Gary Moorcroft. So that's what you're leading towards, Benny. And
yes.
I'm not sure whether you've actually sat under one before, Benny. It's not the best place in the world to be, but you certainly have to admire what these guys do in being able to take these huge hangers in the game. So I just love Mark O'Connor's response and the way he gave his teammate a standing ovation. He might as well have been sitting in row one, gone and sat with the crowd, cheered him, and then jumped the fence and got back into play. So it was a great effort for Mark O'Connor as well, I thought, in terms of the way he celebrated his teammate's mark.
Jono, going back to the Bulldogs, you mentioned Bailey Smith being pretty impressive recently. Where do you think they sit right now? They've had three pretty good weeks, two wins over current top eight sides, and then they were in the game all day against the Cats as well. Do you think they can make the finals?
Yeah, look, they're in the mix, and it's going to come down to the Maxis, just whether or not they can get their couple of wins in a row to get themselves you know, back into the hunt for that position is probably 6 to 8 is where they would like to probably land come the end of the year. Look, they had four very ordinary weeks of footy after rounds 1 and 2, and you know, they just couldn't get their game together. But the last couple of weeks, they've been able to do that. Look, they were against the Brisbane Lions. They probably could have been 5 or 6 goals down at half time, but Brisbane didn't put them away, so they capitalised on that with a big second half of footy. Aaron Norton got his footy back to where it was the week before, when he dominated and taking contested mark after contested mark. So that's where it sort of lies through the midfield for the Bulldogs. If they can get Timmy English back in that lineup, it'll definitely help them, I think, with a bit more first use around the contest. But a lot of their players are really starting to improve on the year. Josh Dunkley, I reckon, has been sensational this year. Mitch Wallace is getting better. So, and the Bont, we just love him. So it's whether he plays forward or through the midfield and how they get that mix right. So he's the second option in terms of scoring on a regular basis. So there's a fair bit of improvement, I think, for the Bulldogs. And hopefully over the next couple of weeks leading into the byes, which everyone's doing now, they can get a couple more wins on the board and start the challenge in the second half of the year.
And the Doggies really stuck with the Cats for a good 3 quarters there, Jono, at the weekend. Do you think at all that they got an emotional bounce from Tom Boyd's shock retirement throughout the week? Did that play any part in sticking with probably the best side in the league for 3 terms?
Yeah, look, I think it plays a bit of a role, because you want to, you know, obviously have a teammate like Tom Boyd in the position that he was in and the impact he had during that final series. Look, he's a loved player at the Bulldogs. It was testament, you know, to the impact he had with the way Luke Beveridge, you know, sent him off in his press conference and breaking down. So that just goes to show the type of person that Tom was and where he was held at the footy club. So yeah, there is a natural progression to that on game day. I think the home game this weekend, you know, hopefully they they do something to send him off. You know, obviously Richmond did that with Sean Grigg on the weekend. So there might be a little bit more of a flow on this week with Tom, but I'm not too sure what the club's going to do in that instance. But yeah, so look, it does for the build-up. Once the game starts, the players just get in their own mode and you really forget about it, to be honest.
John, just one more before we let you go. A lot of, you mentioned you were watching The Couch last night, and a big part of the show was talking about the skill level of footballers these days. And, you know, listening to some talkback radio, some people have thrown out that it might be apparel related. You know, more new Sharons are being used, more night games are being played. I suppose you've worked with the best young draftees in the AFL Academy as well, so you've seen the skill level of the modern day player coming through. Do you believe that skill level in the AFL is as bad as it ever seems, or is that a bit of an overreaction?
Yeah, no, it's not an overreaction, because we watch it consistently. You look at the guys commenting on it, watch all games, but are live at games, you know, 3 or 4 per weekend. So it's you got to respect what they're saying, and I agree in essence, especially that delivery inside forward 50 and the aspects of that. The turnover footy, the goal kicking hasn't been as good as what, you know, it has been in the past when you go back years. Look, maybe the footwear has a little bit to do with it, the type of boot that the players wear these days. You know, a lot of that sort of plasticky sort of stuff I don't think sits well, or the different type of leather. Look, you can't blame the footies at all. You've still got to drop it straight, so generally it'll come off the boot. But maybe the fact that, you know, a lot of guys are losing traction out there, I don't know whether the footwear may be playing a part in all this as well. But generally, it just comes down to the amount of work that these guys are able to do during the week. And look, I remember coming through, and it didn't hurt me to go into the club, you know, more often than not, and actually do extra work, grab an assistant coach and just go and kick 100 balls or have 50 shots at goal every single week. Because, and it didn't hurt in terms of, you know, my injuries or, you know, things like that leading into games or loads and all that. So I know it's different these days, and I get it, but I did come through a process where it was, you can go and do as much as you want, to then being restricted with loads. And, you know, when you just get yourself out there and kick more often and touch the balls in various situations, you get better and better. So I don't know whether it'll start to circle back a little bit the other way, and players will eventually spend a bit more time at the club performing their craft, because at the end of the day, you know, it's having an effect on outcomes of games.
What we do know is if players do join the forwards club, their kicking will improve dramatically. Is that correct?
Well, the forwards club's a little bit different there, Benny, where we want those forwards that might be a little bit selfish as well. Or if you're running into an open goal, we want it launched onto level 4
yes.
or out of the car park at the country ground. Or
yes.
if your teammate does get injured, we want you to be first over there and grab the footy out of his hands, pretend to check he's all right, and then go and take the shot of goal yourself.
Oh,
or if it goes out in the full, we want you to be the first to sprint over and get it and have that shot of goal. So we want the good stuff, and we want the highlights, no doubt, and we want you to send them into all the social aspects at Fox Footy. But we also want those acts that just add a little bit of humour to what we're trying to achieve as well.
Good to see the high moral standards being maintained there at the Ford Club, Ford's Club, Jono.
Well,
good work.
Ultimately, Benny, it's the Fords that bring everyone through the gate.
This
mate.
Is true.
So that's that's what we're about.
Great. Thanks for your time, mate, and happy dog walking and across the road safely.
Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
Thanks very much to Western Bulldogs great Brad Johnson for joining us. For interesting comments about the Rising Star Award. And I'd forgotten, Sarah, that he was part of the Rising Star judging panel that meets and throws in their opinion every week. Because there's two players that are nominated for the Rising Star in the AFLW season every week.
Now,
granted, there's only a 7-round season, but that does already still happen. Is there enough to go around, though, for potentially two every week?
Well, it might not have to be two every week. They might have the discretion that if there's been two outstanding performances, that they go for it. And I think that makes sense because I think Jono was kind of saying that we look for players that have built up form as well. And I understand that. But what if a player just has a breakout freak game? It seems a bit strange to me that goes unrewarded.
Yeah, many times at the end of a season, you're just picking players based on their entire year instead of who had the best round 21 game when it could be some random 23-year-old who doesn't really fit the Rising Star.
Yeah, we don't want you.
No, exactly. And I imagine there's also a financial aspect because I think, was it $1,000 to the junior club each week?
Yeah.
I mean, surely a bank couldn't afford more than $22,000.
Poor
Nab. Oh, they're bankrupt, I've heard.
Nab do fantastic work with the AFL,
yes.
Of course. Now, Sarah, are you happy to sing to your own sting?
Fair or farce. All right.
That.
Now, my first question was going to be directed to you, Ben. I'm still going to give it to you because it's a bit topical.
Yes.
Noah Bolter was robbed of a Rising Star nomination this weekend. Fair or farce?
Yeah, I think that's fair. What was Bradley Smith's numbers?
Did he have 26 or 27?
Oh, you know what? He had a very good game.
But Bolter was the second in the player ratings for that entire game.
Yeah, he was basically par with Dustin Martin, really. And Dusty had a sensational game.
Is the problem there that robbed implies that Smith was bad? We agree that Bolter was very good. But when there are two very good players, it's hard to split them.
Bolter was instrumental in a victory, whereas Smith played in a loss.
Yeah.
I'm pretty split.
Who would you have picked of the two?
I probably would have picked Bolter.
Yeah. Doesn't necessarily mean robbed, but you can say
no
that
robbed. We'll go with that.
It can
go
be
with
wrong.
That.
No, that's fair then.
All right, Maxie, Sir Doug Nicholls round is the best round of the home and away season, fair or farce?
Oh, in terms of the spirit in which everything comes about and the enjoyment that we have and seeing all the fantastic Indigenous designs, I'd have to say that's very fair.
How good are the jumpers?
Yeah. Get better every year.
Oh, I love them. I froth them.
I like the...
I do.
That's the scientific term, I believe. I like the Geelong little tribute to Polly Farmer at the back.
Yes, that is very, very nice.
And glow in the dark. I can see kids getting that jumper and wearing it on their bed and turning the lights off.
Yes.
Ooh, number five.
So they should play that game at Waverley Park in the 90s.
Waverley Park. Or Blundstone Arena. Do anyone think the Blundstone Arena night games are really dark and hard to see? Did you notice that watching the Swans game on...
Just watching some great footy there, Ben.
Yeah, right.
Just not concentrating
on
the light.
When they use all the power for that game, the rest of Tasmania has none. So it's a contrast sort of thing.
Although Marvel Stadium was very hazy on Saturday night. I did notice that as well.
Okay.
Did they have smoke go off for the Bombers entrance or something?
No.
Like that?
That would have been the highlight of the game. All right, Ben, over to you.
Oh, Dylan Shield finally kicking goals.
Yeah, whatever. The Swans are better without Lance Franklin. Fair or farce?
Oh, they're more predictable. More unpredictable without Lance Franklin, but they're not better. So I'd say that's a farce. I still think that Lance is a big part to play. But I always keep going back to what John Longmire said after the elimination final loss against the GWS Giants, and they have to find some more avenues to goal. So I think it's beneficial that while he's out, they have been able to find some new avenues to goal. I think Tom McCartan probably had his best game on the weekend. Tom Papley kicked four goals. I think he had a career best game according to the official AFL player ratings. So
George Hewitt's one of the best contested footy players in the comp right now.
Saw that,
yeah,
the post-stoppage clearance numbers. Yes. So I think I Still think they're a better side with Buddy in it, though.
If you keep in mind, they have played the Roos and the D's for their wins. So.
This is true.
Great wins, thank you. Maxie!
rather the Bombers, I believe.
Ray Razor Chamberlain's spray of a fellow umpire is the best audio the umpire's mics have picked up all year, fair or fast?
Fair. The idea of Ray Chamberlain telling an umpire to pay attention to the game rather than other matters is rather hilarious, Sarah.
Do you like him, though?
I love Ray Chamberlain.
A bit of colour, a bit of flavour.
Yeah, that's what you want. We're going to have two options. We're going to have umpires who are completely unknown and anonymous and irrelevant and get everything right, just get robots at that point. I'd rather have Ray.
Yeah, Ray over robots for sure. All right.
That's my hashtag.
Ben.
Yes.
The ending to Game of Thrones was wholly disappointing, fair or fast.
Spoilers. As in W-H-O-L-L-Y?
Yeah.
Yes.
Spoiler.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Tune out for, let's do 60 seconds of I'll count. Go.
No, I think what was the premise of the question?
The ending to Game of Thrones was wholly disappointing.
Yes, no, that's fair. I think so. I watched it live and with the world on Fox Showcase at 11 a.m. on Monday.
Oh, you did it in Company time. Man.
Yes, I did it in time.
Wow.
So I left feeling wholly disappointed after I think five of the six episodes this season. The only episode that really got me going was the one, the Battle of Winterfell against the Dead, and they won. But that was halfway through the series, and a very ballsy move, Sarah, to put that episode on halfway through the series. And then it sort of fell flat towards the end. I think overall the major criticism is that the series was too rushed. Six episodes. Granted, they were some of the 80-minute episodes, but the series was too rushed. And I think that was its greatest flaw. But what a wonderful series. And I think people will be going back to season one and starting again and watching it all again.
Yeah, no, I am.
Which you can do all on Foxtel.
Okay.
Wow, you've hit 60 seconds on the head there. Welcome back if you skipped ahead 1 minute in your podcast
app. All right. For the final question on this edition of Fair or Fast, Maxie.
Dramatic. What's it going to be?
The only thing more disappointing than the Kangaroos on Saturday night was the election result.
Fair
or Fast.
Look, I was at a professional wrestling event at the time and kept my mind off things. Let's not get too political. You know, people are listening to this for sport, not politics reasons. Fair.
Mm. Well said.
Sarah, that was a very authoritative edition
of
Fair or Fast.
Tom, you're not welcome back. Thank you.
That was excellent, I do have to say. Well done, Sarah Ollie. Time now for the round 10 tips and cups. For the upcoming round of action and the cups. You can always see the cups, if you miss the cups, you can always see them on the blowtorch, which is goes out on Thursday afternoon.
I think the cups are getting a bit of a cult following.
Yeah, no, liking this. I can't claim it's an original idea, but happy to stick with it. Sydney and Collingwood, as we start Sir Doug Nicholls round on Friday night for the Robbie Armat Cup.
Of course.
Can you remember Robbie Armat?
No, cannot. But just on that... I think there's a chance that no Indigenous player is going to feature.
Yeah, Collingwood unlikely to challenge the Travis Varko.
Which is a shame, isn't
Buddy
it?
Because playing. Buddy unlikely to play.
The Swans jumper. Oof, they've gone back to that black swan. I'm really considering getting it, even though I don't think that adults should wear them. But
Would you put your Lear badge on the new jumper?
Yes, that would be very sure. but no, I think the Magpies get up here, Ben. Mm.
We did a piece last week on foxfooty.com.au about each club's bogey ground.
Yes.
Where they play their worst footy. And Sydney's is the only one where their bogey ground is their home ground.
Yes.
They are bad at the SCG. So even if this was played at Stadium Australia, I would still be picking Collingwood.
Australia, yes, like that. Hawthorn and Port Adelaide for the Brent Renoff Cup, 2008 Premiership player.
Don't need to mention 2008, Ben.
Where is this game?
This game is in Tasmania.
Oofed, 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 oofed.
I don't trust either of these teams right now.
I like Port Adelaide, and I know Hawthorn are really good down there, but I'm just going to stick with my gut here and say the Power.
Probably get Robbie Gray and Tom Jonas back this week.
It's still a very long injury list, but that'll make it somewhat shorter. I'll pick the Hawks in contrast. I'll just say that these tips aren't necessarily what we end up going with by the end of the week because I...
No, I usually backflip.
I said I was going to pick Brisbane, and I backed Brisbane all year, and then I talked myself out of it. I'll pick the Crows. Mm. What a fool I was, Ben. No, what a fool I was.
I was a fool as well because I tipped the Crows as well. Western Bulldogs and North Melbourne on Fox Sports 503 this Saturday for the Jose Romero Cup.
Hey, ole.
I'm going to go with my mate Jono and go for those
racial
Bulldogs.
Yes, North is okay. The Dogs, I actually think, honestly, could make the eight. They are scoring so much better recently.
It'd be a big story if they were able to get up from the eight, particularly how they started the season. Yep. Adelaide and West Coast. Adelaide Oval. This is a huge game for the Tyson Stengline Cup.
Of course. Again, how can you trust either of these teams right now? They just don't look like... Yep. They're going to finish in the top six, probably.
I think I trust Adelaide more because of what they've been able to do defensively over the past month.
That's fair.
Their points against has dramatically decreased to be one of the best teams in the comp, whereas West Coast have been a little bit more patchy. Having said that, Crows had... can I just say how good that Brisbane-Adelaide game was on Saturday?
Yeah, I need to watch it.
One
Everyone's
of the best games
it.
Of the season. Adelaide was so good. I don't think Adelaide fans should be too despondent about how their team planned. I don't normally don't tip in this section, but I'd be going for Adelaide just considering that they're a little bit more reliable than the Eagles.
I will as well. Are Adelaide going to be the sort of Geelong of last year where you really trusted their defence, but you just had no idea if the score was going to be there?
Which is strange considering the firepower that they should have up for. Josh Jenkins should come back in after six goals in the Sandville.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Crows for this one.
Having said that, West Coast have got a pretty good record at Adelaide Oval, I think.
They do, actually.
Beat Port in very close games a couple of times there.
Gold Coast Suns v Geelong for the Nathan Ablett Cup at Metricon Stadium.
Prestigious.
Premiership player 2007.
Happier for you to talk about that year, to be honest.
What are you doing, Maxie?
Say they had these teams and they went out there. How many... Like, if it was like a sort of handicap system, how many players would Geelong have to play without for you to tip the Suns? So, if they had 22.
18.
So, if they 18. Just didn't have a bench, no rotations, you'd tip the Suns?
17.
17, sort of?
Well, it depends. Sort of. I mean, are they your five worst players? Or do I get to pick the players not playing?
I think Chris Scott gets to take them out by choice.
Yeah. No, even though the Suns haven't won that many games, I still like what they're about.
Yeah. Stuart Dew's been, I think, rightly lauded for what he's been able to do with this list.
Yes.
You have to remember how many pundits unanimously tipped Gold Coast to finish on the bottom of the ladder.
Yep.
And how much better are they than Carlton, I think, at the moment?
I think they're a bit better.
A bit better.
Not a whole lot.
How many wins better? Like two or three wins better, maybe?
I think they are exactly what they are right now. Three wins compared to one win.
Right.
I think the Blues win more games for the rest of the season.
Dreamtime at the G is Richmond and Essendon for the Tristan Cartledge Cup.
Cartledge?
Mm.
I don't have much cartilage in my nose. That's off topic. I'm going to go Tigers.
How do they measure that?
No, I can't. Like, you know how you do the pig nose?
Yeah,
like you push it up. Mine doesn't push up.
Mine goes a lot.
Yeah, okay. This is good podcasting.
It's a visual medium. Everyone knows that.
Very interesting sights that I just witnessed to play on.
Richmond? I'm going to tip?
Yeah. Yeah, obviously.
Is it obvious?
I'm just, you know.
They've looked pretty good.
A bit prejudicial with the Bombers, you know that.
Well, yeah. They went against the stat that they had where every win they needed to kick 17 goals or more and every loss they'd kick 10 or fewer.
Yep.
They won with 8 goals. It's not a great thing that they only kicked 8 goals.
But the stat that was ringing true was that Anthony McDonald, Tippin Woody kicked 3 goals, and when he kicks goals, they win.
He is the true barometer.
Oh, yes.
A genuine barometer there for the Bombers. Pre-season, if you sort of looked at Melbourne and GWS at the MCG for a game, you would have thought, gee, this is going to be decent. But now when they play for the James McDonald Cup on Sunday afternoon.
So it's not the We Hate Tom Scully Shield?
Not quite.
No?
A few more years.
I mean, hate's probably unfair. Yeah.
But I'm always hesitant to put in players that have played for 3 clubs as well in the Cups.
Unless
this
they
feels
start
a little unpure.
When they start having games with 3 teams playing at once, then you can do that.
Are we broadcasting this game, Fox?
We broadcast every game live on Fox.
Well, we need to get the cameras on the opposite side of the ground because the only stand that's going to be full in this game is the members.
It's going
to look shocking from a broadcast point of view.
Yes.
That's a good point.
Mm. Soulless, I would say. I'm going for the Giants, yes.
They are a much better team than Melbourne at a neutral ground. Are they that much worse at the MCG?
Why is their hoodoo, isn't it? What's the hoodoo?
Two and fourteen.
It's not great.
They have beaten Melbourne as one of the two wins, though.
St Kilda and Carlton for the Kane Ackland Cup. Former champion ruckman.
Great areas.
Another player I haven't heard of.
You haven't heard of Kane Ackland?
No.
Okay.
With a C or a K?
With a C.
Like Kane Little.
Yes, like Kane Little, but C A I N
Kane. Yes, yes.
Not like the wrestler Kane.
No, not like K A N E.
Fire and Brimstone.
Yes. Unmask.
Well, this is a danger game for St Kilda because we saw what an emotional response Carlton had against the Magpies after their shocking loss to North Melbourne.
Correct.
Will this happen again? I'm going to go with no. I'm going to go for the Saints.
Come on. Oh, I agree.
And then this could be close to the game of the round. Fremantle and Brisbane for the Des Headland Cup.
This would be game of the round if Fremantle decides to play attacking footy.
Yes.
If they play the style of the last few weeks since that GWS game.
Yeah, Ben Dixon's got a point. He was very strong on the podcast last week.
I agree. I completely agree. Dico? That they're almost deciding not to play fun footy, Ross Lyon's team. It's and based on that, I want Brisbane to win because I want their exciting, fast, free-flowing style to win out.
I think they will win, and I think Lachie Neale will really give it to them. The Dockers, that is.
He could be. Could he be winning the Brown at the moment, Lachie Neale?
He's got to be up there, doesn't he?
Yeah. I don't know how many votes it would have been taken off him in Brisbane victories so far this season.
Could the top three be him, Tim Kelly, and Patrick Cripps?
Cripps, potentially.
Yep.
That sounds
right. I like it.
Which is crazy.
Tim Kelly being a Brownlow medalist, like that'd be an
in his second year.
Unbelievable storyline to follow, and then what might happen in October.
Would
as
he
well.
Have a Brownlow bonus in his contract? I mean, he probably doesn't.
Taken out of the draft for a two-year standard contract, I would heavily doubt it.
Get busy, Tim. Put it in there quickly. Just pencil
just
it in.
Rewrite that very quickly.
Sarah, very nice work from you on the podcast as well. Tom would be very nervous about the Fair or Fast.
I would have thought so.
Offerings.
I'm happy to come back for that segment.
Good work, Sarah. And good work, Maxie. And good work to you listeners out there for supporting us on the Fox Footy podcast. And keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.